this chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that is the 8th chapter, is particularly tuned to the devotion, concentration on the divine, and through that getting one's personality illuminated. This is, as I had mentioned earlier too, from 7th chapter onwards, the Bhagavad Gita turns more towards the devotional aspects in the formal sense. The discussion on bhakti or devotion begins there, because that is the most potent and psychologically suitable path for most of us, the path of devotion. There is path of knowledge, there is path of work, and there is path of psychic control. All are very good, and we all need to combine these in our spiritual practice. The path of devotion has a very specific, special importance in human life for most of us, because we tend very naturally to act according to our emotions. Our emotions pull us towards things. So therefore, if these emotions are given a turn towards God, they become a great tool. A big engine is, as it were, supporting our journey. So the journey becomes faster and smoother, the less troublesome. Therefore, this path of devotion is described in great details. Last Friday, we were discussing that how, by concentrating on God and thinking about God, this practice has to be done. And that practice has to be done not by abandoning our duties, but while doing these duties, the thought of God is to be kept in mind. The two things must go simultaneously. Let us remove this idea from our minds that either I can do my work or I can think of God. It is not necessary. In fact, the secret or the key to spiritual illumination is combining these two. And not that we don't combine our particular emotion and the duties that we do. The great example is that of the toothache, that as we do our work but are in the background aware that there is a painful sensation there. And whatever we are doing, that sensation is always felt. So similarly, instead of that painful sensation, substitute that with the awareness of God. I told you that nice joke. One of our Swamis was asked that, tell me something about transcendental meditation. And that Swami, he was a bit humorous, so he said, I really don't know much about transcendental meditation, but I can tell you about the dental meditation. And then he told his idea that if you have a toothache, then your mind is constantly there. So similarly, you think about God as a constant thing going on while you are doing all other works. So, Mam Anusmara Yudhyacha, that was the verse that we saw last time, on last Friday, that while doing your duties, keep on thinking of God, keep on remembering God. that Maam Anusmara. And all the times, Sarveshu Kaleshu, all times, keep on thinking about God and Yudhyacha. Means whatever works that we have to do, keep on doing those works. For Arjuna, why did he say fight? Because that was there the duty for Arjuna. So, you have to do that duty, Arjuna was told. And so we have to do our duty, not that everybody has to then take up the gun and then join the military and go fighting. Not at all. Somebody may be a farmer, somebody may be running a shop, somebody may be a teacher, somebody may be a student. We have our duties, the things that we are required to do, that is called duty. It is in duty, it is not a question of liking and disliking. It is not being done because I like it, but because I need to do it. And that is the idea behind duty. There is a commitment also involved in duty, that sense of commitment that I need to do it because I have committed to it. I have said that, yes, I will do it, and therefore I must do it. So, like if the parents are taking care of children, now it is a sense of duty is there, that yes, they are my children, I must take care of them, and so they are committed to it. Not that they won't like to do many other things, but they say, no, my duty to my children comes first. After I finish it, then in the remaining time and with remaining energy, I will do the other things. So that is the idea of duty, that you have this sense of commitment there. So have that sense of commitment. Remove likes and dislikes from that and think of God constantly while doing it. So, this is something that needs to be practiced. Not that it will come automatically. Things that are difficult, but though anything that is difficult, through dedicated practice, those things become gradually easier, to the extent that then it becomes your second nature. It is not that then you will have to remember, oh, I need to think of God. And somebody may be in the beginning, may be thinking of football, but then has to remind, oh, no, not of football, let me think of God. And forcibly substitute football by God. Afterwards, even if that person is playing football, that person will be remembering God and playing football. That much transformation can come in the life of a person. Constant remembrance of God will not leave that person. Now, in a few verses to come, we actually started a little discussion on that. Lord is telling how the meditation should be done. An imagery, a beautiful imagery is provided for a psychological ease of remembrance. That, and we will look into that. Now these two verses, I will recite them together because they together form a sentence. In one verse, the sentence doesn't get completed, and therefore, although these are two verses, they are translated together.
Kavim Puranam Anushasitaram Anuraniyan Samanusmaredya Sarvasya Dhatara Majentya Rupam Aditya Varana Tamasa Parastat Prayana Kale Manasa Chalena Bhaktya Yukto Yoga Balena Jaya. ശിശുവോർമധ്യേ പ്രാണമാവേശ സമ്യക് സതം പരം പുരുഷമുപൈതി ദിവ്യം.
This is verse number 9 and 10. He who endowed with devotion, of course he, you should always include she also, don't take it any gender specific thing here. He who endowed with devotion meditates at the time of death with a steady mind, having by the power of yoga properly fixed the life breath in between the eyebrows on the being who is wise, ancient, the ruler, smaller than the smallest, the sustainer of all, inconceivable form, resplendent like the sun, and beyond ignorance, he attains the shining supreme being. Now this is given as a help, a suggestion, a very powerful tool to concentrate. This is a psychologically helpful tool. This is there is nothing that is to be debated about it from the point of view of whether it is real or not real. But it will be helpful for meditation. That is the meaning of symbol. A symbol is something that helps us to hold on to the symbolized. You pick up a symbol as the sign for that which you want to remember. And how that symbol should be, that should be easier, much more comprehensible, and something that will stick in the memory automatically. If the symbol itself is very cumbersome, then it doesn't serve the purpose. It would be easier to remember the original thing, that a boy was forgetting this notebook. So somebody told him that you can remember notebook, and gave him much longer a word, N for this and O for this, and so it is much easier to remember the word notebook than that cumbersome word. It doesn't serve as the symbol for notebook. So one should have something that is much easier to remember, much easier to conceive, and also that which has striking similarities with the symbolized. There are two types of symbols used. Some are just like the algebraic those letters, that like if you are told that there are some mangoes, after giving 3 to A, 4 to the B, and 3 to again to C, one is left. So how many mangoes were there to begin with? Then you assume that there were X mangoes, and then write an equation, and then you get the X means this. So now the X, it becomes an arbitrary symbol for mangoes. It is not that X has to have any similarity with mangoes. You cannot eat X instead of mango. It doesn't have the color of mango. It is an arbitrarily chosen symbol without any similarity with the symbolized. It is an arbitrary tool. You can choose any other letter for the ease of calculation, that's all. The answer doesn't depend on whether you say X, let X be the mangoes, or let G be the mangoes, or let alpha or omega be the mangoes. Whatever you assume to be mangoes, that will be okay. So there the symbols are arbitrary, and this symbol has no relation with the symbolized. It is no qualities of the symbolized are reflected in the symbol. there is no natural connection between the symbol and the symbolized. But there are some symbols which have much more natural relationship with the symbolized. This, of course, friends, is a very beautiful science, that connection between the symbol and the symbolized, how certain symbols become psychologically automatic for us. We do not consider later on even of them as symbols, like the red light for stopping and green light for going ahead. Now, this is a universally seen symbol. It could be other, the reverse also. Just for the sake of logic, you can say that, well, let us make red to go ahead and green to stop. But red color has some similarities with the idea of danger and stop, maybe because of the color of the blood, or maybe because the red color automatically attracts attention more than other colors. Therefore, it is said that if you have a red car, then you are likely to be booked for traffic violations more than if you have a white car. Because red will capture the attention of the police more quickly. And so, if 5 cars are having the traffic violation, now that person, that officer can go only after one of them. So, the one that grabs more attention will be followed, and red car, the red color has more chance. There is statistics about it, that how red cars tend to get more tickets. And the reason is this, that it grabs, that color grabs more attention. So, there is a psychological connection between the symbolized and the symbol. And therefore, red color is chosen for such things naturally. Wherever there is a danger sign, usually it is painted in red. That is the reason behind it, that it grabs attention. It is not arbitrary, it is universally seen. Many such symbols are arbitrary, and many symbols are such where there is a connection between the symbolized and the symbol. A tangible connection is there. So here, this idea is used, that tangible connection between God, the symbolized, and this symbol. What do we associate with God? Those things are taken up here. Like, first of all, is the knowledge that transcends all the appearance. And that is why the word kavi is used here. Kavi, one translation of it is poet. It has other translations also. It is the word kavim. Here the translation given is that just wise, and that is also the meaning of the word kavi, wise. So wise in the sense that you transcend the appearance and see the reality beneath. That is actually wisdom. If you just go by appearance, then you get deceived. The wise person goes beyond the appearances and sees the reality that is underneath. And that is also the job of a poet. The poet doesn't give only a description, but brings out many hidden things associated with it. So, therefore, in Hindi, it is said that who is a poet, the one that who can see that which the sun cannot see, means whatever the normal sight cannot perceive, this the poet perceives. That is why poetry is this a very different art than of literature which are longer, but poetry is usually shorter. It is more incisive. It goes deeper and brings out the hidden things. And it makes you think also. So in that sense, a wise person as well as an artistic person is called kavi, a poet or a wise man, a person with those capabilities. So a god is the wisest, and therefore you don't associate ignorance or foolishness with God. Oh, God is so foolish. That would be a foolish statement. So a god is associated with highest wisdom. So that is one connection formed. Then the most ancient. Everything had sprung out from God, and therefore God was before anything else. So most ancient, the substratum of all creation, it is there. Like the screen is there before the, you see the movie, and all the pictures you are seeing are actually on the screen. So therefore, in that sense, all these forms that we see, they were a creation that came out of this reality or God. And so God is older than that. In another Upanishad also, like Kathopanishad also uses this idea. The oldest, the most ancient is God. Another idea is the controller, governor. Everything is governed by God. Who governs everything here? That is a very beautiful idea. In fact, one of the origins of the concept of God is this concept of controller. The Sanskrit word for that is Ishwara. In Sanskrit, there are many words which can be considered synonyms for God. But each brings out a special feature associated with divine. Like the all-pervading existence that is shown by the word Brahman. The one who is indweller, that is again another idea about God, and that is the given by the word Atman. Then the one like the controller of everything, that is given by the word Ishwara. Controller, this is this whole universe. Somebody has to govern it. Governments, you need a government, a governor. Rhode Island is the smallest state in U.S. and still requires a governor. So remember, think of the whole big universe. It also will require somebody to govern it, to run it, to see that everything is proceeding according to rules and regulations. And one thing that we notice in this universe right from our childhood is that it goes on according to certain set norms. That the sun rises and sets. Can you imagine that the sun rose and never set? That is not really, you cannot think of it. Day and night, the cycle goes on. So somebody is there who is managing it. It is, therefore, the idea of governor is very important. You cannot imagine anything without a government or a governor. A machine, you have a machine, you require an operator to run that machine, for whom that machine is put together. In Indian philosophy, there is a philosophy that is called logic, Nyaya. The Indian logic system, And that logic system has one very beautiful aphorism. It says that whenever the things are seen to be brought together, then that bringing together is for someone else's use. It is not for the things which are brought together, but somebody needs to use them, control them, govern them. For that person, the things have been brought together in a system. And like you cook the food, many ingredients are brought together, some processes are involved, but that is for somebody's consumption. Somebody has planned it, and according to that plan, the cooking has gone for somebody. It is not, you cannot think that some vegetables decided to get themselves cut and then put together, and some spices also themselves decided to fall into it. Some butter and oil also was feeling too bored and decided to jump into the cauldron. And you cannot imagine such things. Somebody is there to cook it, put things together. And why is it being put together? For some purpose. For some purpose the things have been put together. That is the law of bringing things together. That how this house got built. You cannot imagine, you know, that the pieces of timber and the pieces of that concrete and steel, they all decided to jump together and sat in such a way that now you got the house. There has to be some planner, an architect, and then things have been brought together according to the plan. And then it is made for some purpose. So, without that, a combination cannot be thought of. So, this universe is a very systematic combination. Things go according to plan. One thing that we notice that it is a cosmos and not a chaos. The existence of certain laws there. The science tries to discover those laws. Everything, you know, that we see, that there must be some system, some plan according to which the things work. And that who makes that work like that? The governor of the whole universe. So therefore, you and I cannot govern the whole universe. We cannot even govern our own lives. That Jesus has pointed out that you cannot make even a hair on your own head, black or white, and think of, yeah, I will do this and I will change this. Can you make a hair black or white? That also you don't have the power to do. What to speak of, you know, governing and controlling and changing whatever I like. No, you cannot do that. It is all in the hands of somebody else. You are just at most an instrument. You are made an instrument, that's all. You don't have any power to do anything. So you are not controller. You are not governor. But God, one idea about God is therefore governor, God governs. Then that is Anushasitaram. Then another idea is given here, the smaller than the smallest. That is the indwelling idea. God is in everything. So to be in everything, it has to be smaller than that thing. Otherwise, how will it go into it? So it is smaller than the smallest. And so therefore, involved in everything. In one of the beautiful and very poetic verses in Brihadaranyak Upanishads, it is said, therefore, that how God governs everything, it governs things from within, from inside, and therefore God's governance cannot be rebelled against. All other governments you can rebel. Your rebellion may succeed, may not succeed, that is another thing. But there is possibility to rebel against it. But God's governance is such that there is no scope of rebellion, because God does not govern from outside, but from inside. You may say that I can do whatever I will. The philosophers ask this question, but can you will what you want to will? It is somebody creates that will in you, and then you may feel that I do according to my will. How did you get the will? Somebody put it there. So, God is inside your will, and therefore you do whatever is done. So, God's governance, it's a very charming, beautiful idea, and therefore that governance cannot be rebelled against. That governance, you cannot just escape it. It is, you can escape these laws of this, our US government or any other political government. Why? Because they are externally imposed laws. And therefore, there are transgressions. And many escape that. In fact, that is one of the sayings, that it is all the different things which are illegal. They are all right, people say, they are all right as long as you don't get caught. Because many don't get caught, and therefore it is all right if you don't get caught. The external government cannot catch all violations. A police officer caught somebody and started arguing. So many other cars were also speeding. You didn't catch them. Did you not see all cars? I was just following them. Why did you just catch me? And the officer gave a very nice reply. Hey, when you go fishing, do you catch all the fish in the sea? You do that, and does it mean that you don't catch any? So you are the fish that caught into my net. So that is, so many escape, but some get caught. But this God's governance and the legal system is such, no one can escape. No one can escape, because it is being ruled from inside. It is, you cannot escape, because you are the witness of it. Nobody else may see, but you have seen. And that is how by your eyes God is seeing it. How can you escape it? You may cheat others, but you know that you have done this thing. And by that God has seen it. And that is how God sees, sitting inside. And thus that governance is just, you can never transcend it, never escape it. So, that is another idea. Inconceivable form. God's form cannot be conceived. God can take all forms, and yet God has no form, because any form is a limitation. And therefore there is a nice story that about Lord Krishna. Lord Krishna was seated in his parlor, and many were coming to see, and one a portrait maker came there. He was expert in making portraits and exact. So he had the idea that let me he make the portrait of Lord. And he started, Lord said, okay, oh, I will give you a sitting, no problem. So Lord sat and he made the portrait exactly looking at, and with great care and attention he made the beautiful portrait. But by the time he finished it, Lord changed his form. And the portrait is now not matching. And Lord said, what kind of portraits? Look, it doesn't look at me. And look at your the picture that you painted. So much difference. Eh? Then he tried again. Again, Lord did the same trick, that after he did everything and God changed the form again. Gone, he, that portrait, that painter became so dejected. Oh, never in my life I had to suffer this kind of defeat, this kind of disgrace. I thought I can make portrait of anyone, but how can, every time, how can I make such terrible mistake? He felt so dejected and depressed, thought of, giving up everything and committing suicide. So, went to the forest. And in the forest, before he was about to commit suicide, he met a sage. And sage asked, why you look so dejected? And he told that what happened, and said that I had always prided myself on making exact portraits. But here I went to Krishna, and then I could not make the portrait. I cannot digest this humiliation. Never in my life I suffered such terrible humiliation, and therefore I don't want to survive. The sage said, don't worry. I will tell you how to make the portrait of God. And he said, okay, take this. And he said, okay, Lord, I have made your portrait. And this must be exact. Lord, it was covered by some curtain. Lord took it out. And then he couldn't say that it is not like him, because it was a mirror, A mirror was brought there. So whatever form God would take will be reflected into that. It was an exact portrait. Is it not, Triveni? That if you bring mirror, what will you see? Your face as it is. So therefore, it was a wonderful portrait. So, Lord is beyond all forms. Yet, the problem is you cannot call it just formless. It is with form as well as beyond forms. What in our common dual throng, the dual existence become contradictory, in God all those things become complementary. In here, in our regular existence, something can be with form or without form. But for God, it is with form and without form. It is all this, with qualities, without qualities. God is both. Here it is described that resplendent, another idea is full of light. Light is one of the most ancient and most powerful idea about God that you find in all scriptures world over. Light is a very powerful symbol. It is therefore... you read that in Bible also. Lord said, let there be light, and there was light. It is, I am the light of the world. Jesus says that I am the light of the world. This is a very powerful symbol, light. And therefore, think of God as resplendent, shining, effulgent, disseminating light. Wherever you have the light, your mind just gets attracted to the source of light. That is, again, a very important human trait of attention. So therefore, you may say that, well, I would like to think of God as dark. It will be difficult to pay attention to that. It is much easier to pay attention or concentrate on God who is luminous. So, full of luminosity. Then, resplendent like sun and beyond ignorance. If you meditate on God like this, then you will go beyond ignorance by becoming one with it. This is a tool for meditation. Think of God like this, that it is the wisest being. It is the governor, controller, beyond all forms and yet pervaded in all forms, the smaller than the smallest and yet all pervading and resplendent like sun. Think of that. Meditate on the divine being like this. This is a very powerful suggestion to think of God like that. And then how do you think of that? But through concentration has to be there. So it is said that when you concentrate on something, you bring, as it were, all your attention, all your thoughts, as it were, come here between the two eyes, two eyebrows, and think of that with total concentration, bringing all the, as it were, the life force there. Think of God in that form. Then he says that Lord in the next verse tells that associated with a sound symbol, the sound or the word is again another important tool. The name. How do we remember each other? We have a name. And so it becomes easier, most psychologically convenient thing to remember is associated with a sound symbol. Like you say, Triveni, or Charlie, or Nancy. So then the person gets remembered. Think of the name and the form and the qualities, everything associated with that person just manifests to you. That is the great power of the name. And so, let us associate, he says, that God with a symbol, a sound symbol. And again, what sound symbol is psychologically most convenient and most powerful. Any symbol, any sound can be used. Practically, every sound, since it emanates from God, can be the name of God. Any name is the, after all, the name of God. Sri Ramakrishna, somebody was using very bad words, very foul words, which normally we don't utter. Instead of in the prints, you put there the dots or cross, or in this language you say bleep, so you don't utter them. They are bad, foul words. Sri Ramakrishna, while hearing those words, also went into samadhi. Why? Because he said that after that all sounds come from that God alone. So even if you hear those words, his mind would go to God. he had formed such tremendous connection with God that everything, anything will just be able to connect him to God. But our minds are not like that. Even the word God may not actually be able to associate us with God, and therefore we need something that is psychologically very convenient and related to the nature of the truth. The nature of the truth should reflect in that symbol, and thus it becomes a more naturalized symbol. So, how that symbol should be, Lord says,
Yadaksharam Veda Vidu Madanti Vishanti Yad Yatayo Vitaragaha Yadichantu Brahmacharyam Charanti Tatte Padam Sangrahena Pravakshe.
And this verse gives the introduction, a caution, something that you should be very alert to listen to. If an important message is to be given, first it is said, attention please, or may I have your attention please, because I am going to tell something very important. Please pay attention. So, since Lord is going to tell something very important, he makes this introduction that what am I going to tell you now? That imperishable principle which the knowers of the Vedas describe, into which the aspirants bereft of all desires enter, desiring which one lives. Abstinent life of a student, that goal, I shall tell you in brief. I am going to tell you in brief. How brief, you know? Single syllable. Brief doesn't mean like preachers. And we tell that I will tell you in brief means it takes 1 hour. Not in that sense brief. It is said that that person is the most hopeful person, or what is it called? The person who is always very optimist. Exactly. Thank you very much. So the height of optimism is that when in the church you listen preacher, and when the preacher says that, so in short what I wanted to say, that person picks up the coat getting ready to leave. Well, that goes on another hour. So it is, not the short that God is going to tell. Short, real short, something that cannot be shortened further. One syllable only, just one syllable, so condensed. Everything is going to be given in such condensed form. So it is so very valuable. That is why he says, please pay attention to that. The whole spiritual practice, as it were, gets condensed into it. That is, in fact, the meaning of the word mantra. That mantra, what is it? That your spiritual practice, the whole journey towards the goal of life, that whole thing is, as it were, symbolically condensed into it. It is like a seed being given to you, in which the whole tree, as it were, is condensed. That seed is so. Wait, you say, let me give you the tree. But that tree is this little seed. And this is the tree. Don't think that it is a little thing. What will it do? Well, it is not a little thing. It is the huge tree that you are seeing. I am giving that
ministry to you in this form. It is small, but if you open, you will see it is huge, big. And those expert Indian weavers in olden days, they used to 9 yards of cloth. It used to be woven so fine that it could be packed, it could be folded and put in a 1 inch size small box. So, small box, but if you open it and unfold it, it is 9 yards of cloth. This is much more condensation, tremendous, that the whole existence is as it were condensed in one sound. That sound speaks everything. All language is condensed into that. And therefore, Lord gives this introduction that whatever this great yogis are practicing, it is for that. What all the scriptures tell about is about that. The Veda Vido Vadanti means the knowers of the scriptures. Now scriptures are so infinitely diverse. Many, you cannot read all of them in the whole lifetime. But yet, all can be condensed in this one thing. Then, for what Brahmacharyam Charanti practicing of continence, it includes, you know, all spiritual disciplines. That is, that being the substratum of spiritual practice, it is told that for what it is they do it. It is for this purpose. Let me tell you, sangrahena means in brief, in a condensed form, and that will be discussed later. Now the time for today's class is over, so that syllable we will look into, and the meaning behind it we shall try to see in our next Bhagavad Gita class. Any questions? Yes, Charlie?
This is a general question. Swami Vivekananda says that religion for oneself alone is not really religion, but only for the sake of others. And yet you have said that when you teach, you do it for your own benefit, and that other people just benefit as a side effect of that. So what is the difference between selfishness and altruism in terms of religion?
Yes, and this question that if you practice religion for just your own liberation, then that is selfishness. But if you are doing something for the liberation of the whole humanity, that is great. Now, the conflict, apparent conflict here is that if you want to be altruistic, if you want to do good to humanity, the first thing that you need to do is remove your selfishness. And this selfishness removal is itself emancipation. What binds me is this little self. And this little self, when it is dissolved, it is the scriptures tell you that you really are infinite like ocean. You are not a drop. What keeps you bound in the drop, in this little drop of body? You are all pervading. What makes you imprisoned in this little body? Well, because you feel that I am this. The liberation means that don't feel that you are just this little body. You are everything. What could be more altruistic than that? So, this is the liberation.
If one ego disappears, all the other egos are still going to be there.
You don't have to worry about it. How do you know that they are going to be there? There is no rational for that. You feel that because you have an ego, you feel there are so many egos. It is something like this, that you are, say, having a nice dream, that and in the dream there are a lot of people around, the many other, you have lot of pets also, and suddenly you wake up from the dream. Now, did you kill everybody in the dream? Where are they now? Where are their egos? What happened to the ego of your friend in the dream? What happened to that ego? Exactly. You know, that is how this knowledge does. It doesn't solve, it resolves. Very good. So let us conclude with the closing prayers.
Gita Sugita Kartavya Kimanyat Shastra Vistarehi Ya Swayam Padmanabhasya Mukha Padmadvina Srita Ekam Shastram Devaki Putra Gitam Eko Devo Devaki Putra Eva Eko Mantraha Tasya Namaniyane Karmapyekam Tasya Devasya Seva Shri Krishna Arpanamastu.